is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick in Washington. How are you and the rest of the country dealing with the tragic death of Kobe Bryant and his 13-year-old daughter, Gianna? They were among 9 people who died Sunday after their helicopter crashed near Calabasas, California. Here's a call from Katie, one of many of you who was devastated by this week's news.
We look at the things that are in the column of good versus focusing on the negative and maintain his legendary status and the good that he's brought to others off the court and after his retirement, to the kids, to the families, to people around the world.
People across the country are dealing with this tragic loss. Kobe Bryant was beloved by so many for his accomplishments and what he gave back to communities and to basketball. A lot of people are also grappling with what to do when a beloved celebrity has a complicated past. What will Kobe Bryant's enduring legacy look like? And how should we memorialize public figures in their totality? Joining me now by phone, Paolo Ughetti. He's staff writer for The Ringer, a sports news site. Paolo, welcome to 1A.
Thank you for having me.
Brian Kamenetsky is also here. Brian is a sports writer and co-host of The Forum Club, a Lakers podcast from ESPN LA 710. Brian, great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us from Los Angeles is Molly Knight. She's a journalist for The Athletic, an online sports news publication. Molly, great to have you as well.
Thanks for having me.
Paolo, it's been about 2 days since Kobe Bryant's sudden and tragic passing. What has struck you about the public reaction now that the public is maybe past that initial shock?
I think especially here in Los Angeles, you see the connection he had built up with all these people. You know, on Sunday, I went to a couple of the murals that depict him, you know, celebrating, and you see all the people from all different kinds of walks of life and all different kinds of areas of LA coming to, you know, drop some flowers or some letters and candles. And it's really, for me at least, you know, I grew up here, but I'm not from here. I'm from El Salvador, and you see people from of Latino descent, you know, you see people from all kinds of walks of life, and all of them having or being brought together rather by the connection to Kobe and his career, which, you know, if you think about it, longer than most NBA players. And I think that really resonated with multiple generations.
And as you talk to Angelenos around LA, Paolo, what are some of the threads, some of the recurring sentiments that you hear as they remember Kobe?
Yeah, I think obviously everybody remembers the big moments, you know, the 81-point game, the championships, and you know, his buzzer beaters and all of that. But there's also something I found really interesting is there's a personal connection with a lot of people. And I think people gravitate to a player like Steph Curry these days because, you know, he plays the game with such joy. Whereas Kobe, he kind of played it with this very hard-nosed dedication and hard work that came to really define him. And I found it interesting that people still gravitated toward that and found it relatable. Almost that hard work that he put in, they felt like, you know, they felt like he inspired them to also do that in whatever their walk of life was.
Now, Brian Kamenetsky, you cover the Lakers. For people who didn't follow his career as closely as maybe a lot of people in Los Angeles, remind us a little bit about his dominance on the court, his numbers. What kind of player was he?
He was arguably the greatest scorer of this generation after Michael Jordan. You know, he just this weekend, LeBron James, also playing for the Lakers, passed Kobe on the all-time points list. To go from fourth to third. So now Kobe is ranked fourth all time in points scored. He had 5 titles, all of which came in a Lakers uniform. There are very few players of this or any other generation who have the sort of statistical accomplishments, who have the all-star appearances and the championships and all of these things. He has an MVP award that Kobe accumulated over the course of 20 years as a Laker.
It's quite a legacy. You know, before we continue talking about Kobe Bryant and his legacy, we also want to honor the memory of the other passengers aboard that helicopter on Sunday. Their names are Christina Mauser, a girls basketball coach in Orange County, California, John Altobelli, head basketball coach at Orange Coast College, his wife Carrie Altobelli, and their daughter Alyssa Altobelli, a player for the Mambas, Sarah Chester and her daughter Peyton, and Ara Zibayan, Kobe Bryant's private helicopter pilot. Molly Knight, you wrote one of the few individual tributes to Gianna Bryant, 13 years old, for The Athletic. She seemed to have accomplished quite a lot in her young life.
She did, and it was important to me. I understand her father was one of the most famous people in the world. And when that happens, when you have a famous parent, I see it all the time in Los Angeles, and I have friends who have famous parents. You're often invisible. You walk into a room with your dad or your mom or your sibling, and everyone stares at them and no one looks at you, or they only talk to you because they want to get to the famous person you're related to. There's something that struck me about this death when I was at the crash site and it was confirmed that Gianna was among those who were killed. I just thought, you know, I don't want her to just be known as Kobe Bryant's daughter, as collateral damage, even in the Kobe Bryant death. And so I went and researched her, and yeah, she was a fierce little young basketball player. She loved it. And I believe if she had the same DNA as Kobe, wanting to be the best and just practicing all the time. I mean, I think she absolutely could have achieved her goals, which were going to play at University of Connecticut and going on to the WNBA. It's just such a shame. This poor girl was only 13 years old, and I believe she needed to be eulogized and remembered as a person in her own right.
Her goal to go to University of Connecticut, dominant women's basketball program in Division I. Molly, the passengers aboard that chopper were headed to a game for the Mamba Sports Academy. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so Kobe Bryant has actually done quite a bit, and he's got four daughters and has been inspired just to be a stay-at-home dad with them and to get involved in youth sports. And the Mamba Sports Academy in Newbury Park is a place where kids go and play basketball. And there was a tournament, I believe he started it with one other person. There was a tournament over the weekend. They were there on Saturday and played, and everything was fine. He lives down in, it's so weird to say lives in present tense. Mm. His family lives down in South Orange County, and it's quite a commute. Driving wise, could take up to 3 hours to get out there into Ventura. He decided, along with some other kids from Gigi's team and their parents, to take his helicopter out there that day to join in with all the games that were being played. And I know Gianna was scheduled to play that day, and I imagine that the other children on the helicopter were as well. So it's just the idea that they were killed going to a basketball tournament really hit me hard. I mean, I grew up playing basketball. I heard from some of my teammates yesterday who were, from when I was 13, we're just talking about all the tournaments we commuted to and just how devastating this is.
In 2018, Bryant appeared on the podcast The Core with the Big Cat and A-Rod. Here's Kobe Bryant talking about his love of helicopters and how he became a passenger.
Tell us a little bit about your routine. You're in Newport Beach, and you take a helicopter. Walk us through it and why and how that started. A lot of people don't know that story.
Yeah, so my routine is always the same. You know, I'd wake up 4 in the morning, and I'd lift weights, really early, 5 in the morning. Mm. Get home at about 6:30 in time to wake up the kids for school. You know, after school activities, all that fun stuff, even on weekends. But then traffic started getting really, really bad. Right. And I was sitting in traffic, and I wound up missing like a school play because I was sitting in traffic, and this thing just kept mounting. I had to figure out a way where I could still train and focus, but still not compromise family time. Mm. And so that's when I looked into helicopters and be able to get down and back in 15 minutes. And that's when it started.
Paolo, Kobe Bryant, one of the people who can skip over L.A. traffic by taking a helicopter instead of sitting on the freeway. What's known at this point about flight conditions on Sunday?
Well, I think, seeing the reports, I think they're still, investigating that, but it seems like some, I remember waking up on Sunday and seeing that there was fog even here in Hollywood. I think there was a report that it might've been, foggy, and that might've possibly affected the flight. But yeah, it was a weird, gloomy day. Like I said, it just kind of carried on throughout the day. And I did notice that the fog, and I wonder, near the mountains, whether that was also something that, you know, was a factor in that sense.
All right, Brian, we're going to take a pause in a minute, but before we do, just give me a sense of the reaction from around the league, other athletes, colleagues of Kobe Bryant.
I think it's difficult to overstate the impact that Kobe had on players. He in the league for 20 years, so there are a lot of guys who play now who were playing against Kobe a few years ago when he retired. But also the way he sort of inspired younger players and the way that they looked up to him as a model, in the same way that players of Kobe's generation might have looked at Michael Jordan or Magic Johnson or Larry Bird. And so the tributes around the league have been frequent. A lot of players his friends have missed games because they just couldn't play. The Lakers won't play tonight, Tuesday night in their game against the Clippers. That was postponed by the NBA. There's just deep levels of grief around the league.
That's Brian Kamenetsky from ESPN LA 710, the Form Club podcast contributor to The Athletic. Paolo Ughetti is here, and so is Molly Knight. We're going to take a pause and then talk about how Kobe Bryant will be remembered in his totality. I'm Todd Zwillick. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Google. From Connecticut to California, from Mississippi to Minnesota, millions of American businesses are using Google tools to grow online. The Grow with Google initiative supports small businesses by providing free digital skills workshops and one-on-one coaching in all 50 states, helping businesses get online, connect with new customers, and work more productively. Learn more at google.com/grow.
What does it take to start something from nothing? And what does it take to actually build it? I'm Guy Raz. Every week on How I Built This, I speak with founders behind some of the most inspiring companies in the world. How I Built This from NPR. Listen and share with your friends.
It's 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. We're talking about the legacy of Kobe Bryant with Paolo Ughetti, staff writer for The Ringer, Brian Kamenetsky, co-host of ESPN LA 710's The Forum podcast, and Molly Knight, journalist for The Athletic. Well, Kobe Bryant could be a polarizing figure, both as a player and as a celebrity. In 2003, he was charged with one count of felony assault. His accuser was a 19-year-old worker at the Colorado Hotel where Bryant was staying at the time. He was 24. She declined to testify in the criminal case that came from the charge, and then the charge was dropped. Bryant settled a civil case outside of court in 2004 with the woman for a nondisclosed amount of money. We heard from a few listeners who struggle to reconcile this part of Bryant's past with the entirely positive tributes that are currently dominating the conversation.
My name's Lauren. I'm calling from Minneapolis, Minnesota, calling about the story on Kobe Bryant's legacy. It's been a really hard and confusing few days processing this news. I was raped when I was 19, which is the same age Kobe Bryant's accuser was in 2003. And so while it's very sad that this, tragic accident happened, that his daughter was on board, I also feel angry and confused that the predominant narrative is that he was this, incredible athlete in person when there was this really dark side to his life. So just trying to hold all of that and, give space for all those emotions.
Thank you for your story, Lauren. We also heard from a listener in Colorado who remembers watching Kobe Bryant play in 2003.
When Kobe became a star, I was the athletic trainer for the women's basketball team at the University of Colorado. I was actually at a Laker game at the Staples Center when they played the Denver Nuggets. And Kobe actually arrived halfway through that game because he'd been in Colorado earlier that day for legal proceedings. He shows up to big cheers. He actually hits the game-winning jumper to beat the Nuggets. So I've always been a little bit conflicted about Kobe. Eventually, the charges were dropped against him. And the more important part is that Kobe made an apology. I believe the girl and what she says happened that day. And part of the reason I believe her is because Kobe apologized and he acknowledged that he, even though he considered what happened consensual, he could understand why she may have thought it wasn't consensual. I do wish Kobe would have been more public about speaking out against sexual assault and about consent, because especially in this Me Too moment and era that we live in, it's still not completely understood.
Rob tweeted this: "It seems to me that Kobe Bryant's trajectory and legacy was significantly altered by the rape incident. The settlement may have been distasteful to some, but it appears to me that he truly made a sincere effort at redemption." Brian Kamenetsky, have you heard similar responses from people you've talked to about this complicated and difficult part of Kobe Bryant's past and whether he truly made amends for it?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are fans of Kobe and fans of the Lakers who don't really want to think about it. I think there are other fans who think it's vitally important to remember this, and I do think it is something that is part of the story and part of the record of Kobe Bryant. And to ignore it does a disservice to history. It does a disservice to accuracy. To me, what I think is so significant is looking at how different things would have been when you compare, 2003, 2004, and when the case was settled, to what would it be now, and what are the prevailing attitudes now? How would this trial have been handled? How the coverage would have been different? His accuser was treated very, very harshly in the media, and the way we talk about consent, the way we talk about victims and accusers, is much different now in a more positive direction. And I think the story of Kobe Bryant would have been significantly different had this incident happened in 15 years later. What you do with that as a sports fan and as a Kobe fan is difficult to quantify, because, in anything where we have sort of these tribal alignments of our favorite teams or our favorite politicians or whoever it might be, we are famous for compartmentalizing these sorts of things and taking the things that we don't like and kind of putting it in a box over here because we don't like to think about them. But what Kobe was accused of doing and what came of that is an important part of this story that should be talked about and should be acknowledged, even while also acknowledging, the work that he did with, girls basketball and with his family and all these other things in the WNBA, and, what came of Kobe in the years that followed.
Let's hear from another one of you, 1A listeners, on this issue of balancing Kobe Bryant's legacy.
Yes, my name is Noah, and I'm calling in reference to the Kobe Bryant question you asked about, should you highlight the bad things? Of course, when an individual has done a lot of good and a lot of bad, that encompasses who they are. But don't biasly highlight one bad thing to overshadow all the good someone has done. Just report it as it is. That's all we want. Kobe was a legend, made a mistake, but talk about his philanthropy and what he's done and keep his legacy going.
Paolo, as you travel around L.A., talk to Angelenos about Kobe and get their memories and their overall impressions, how are they processing this duality? Are they? Do they talk to you about both things?
There was one man who mentioned it, in speaking to him. And the way he framed it was that he thought that, while that was an important part of Kobe's story, which it is, and one that couldn't be ignored and can't be, he did feel like, from his perspective at least, Kobe had matured a lot and grown a lot. And, I think Kobe's outside celebrity status and, welcomes this kind of careful study of his entire life, the flaws and as well as the triumphs. And I think from people's perspectives, he had grown a lot and he had matured. He had seemed to, become a different person from what happened in that moment, even though at the time, I believe that it was, if you go back and look, part of the reason he created this, Black Mamba mentality that came to be known as kind of his nickname was because he wanted to separate himself from what was a really troubling situation. So I think people are, like Brian said, that most of them don't really want to acknowledge it. But, I think if you as a fan are that passionate about Kobe and passionate about his life, and you recognize and you cherish the great things he did, you can also welcome the, maybe not criticism, but the identifying of those tougher situations that did happen and need to be acknowledged, not just for the sake of remembering Kobe, but also for the sake of victims, and not specifically just that victim, but victims across, the country.
I think it's incredibly important to process a celebrity and their legacy in its totality. I hope that the culture is doing that. We're trying to do it here on 1A, and I think it's the way to look at a person's contribution overall when you look at their life and they pass from us. We'll have a few more questions for my guests after a short break. Stay with us. This is 1A.
Many of us have imaginary friends as children. But for some of us, these invisible companions don't go away.
She was as real to me as my friend next to me.
This week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
Back now to our conversation about the legacy of Kobe Bryant. Brian, back to the court for just one second. There's an episode I saw on social media that I just wanted to put to you. You're a much bigger basketball fan than I am. I'm a baseball guy. But I saw a video of a game where Kobe Bryant was on the cusp of 60 points, and he was on the free throw line. He drained one for 59. And then when it was time for him to get a 60-point game, an opposing player on another team stepped into the lane in so that if Kobe Bryant had missed 60 points, he would get another shot, because that's a violation. That was an image that reflected how other players felt about him and his dominance.
Yeah, this is actually from Kobe Bryant's final game, which was replayed Monday night on ESPN, and we replayed it on our air at ESPN LA on the radio. That was his final point as a player. And that player on the Utah Jazz was Gordon Hayward. And there were a lot of people who thought that he did that on purpose. He has said, Gordon Hayward has, that it wasn't intentional. He wasn't trying to get Kobe another free throw if he had missed. But I love that story anyway, because it does sort of show the respect that players had for Bryant as just this icon in basketball, and what he was doing at 37 years old to score 60 points in his final game, the level of theater there, and it felt so appropriate. And I was at that game, and it was one of the most remarkable things I've ever seen. He wasn't really trying to do it. And moreover, I don't think Kobe would have wanted him to do it. Fortunately, he hit the free throw, and so 60 was, untainted in that way.
He looked like he was trying to give him another shot, but he says he wasn't.
It's hard to tell. But guys take a long time to take the free throws, and they get impatient waiting to go try to get a rebound.
Well, let's close out our conversation about Kobe Bryant by hearing from the athlete himself. Here's Kobe Bryant reading Dear Basketball. It's a poem published by the Players Tribune in 2015 and adapted for an Oscar-winning animated short by the same name. Listen.
Dear Basketball. From the moment I started rolling my dad's tube socks and shooting imaginary game-winning shots in the Great Western Forum, I knew one thing was real. I fell in love with you. A love so deep, I gave you my all. From my mind and body to my spirit and soul. As a six-year-old boy, deeply in love with you, I never saw the end of the tunnel. I only saw myself running out of one.
The words of legendary Los Angeles Lakers star Kobe Bryant. Paolo Ughetti is a staff writer for The Ringer. Paolo, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Molly Knight with The Ringer as well. Molly, we appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
And Brian Kamenetsky, sports writer and co-host of ESPN LA 710, The Forum Club. Brian, thank you for your contributions.
Well, thank you.
This conversation was produced by Stacia Brown and edited by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, visit our new website, the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington. It's distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Todd Zwillick. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.